Accession number 30407, Mr. Ralph Curtin, Rail 11. Now, you weren't acting as his driver by that point. How long was it before you acted as his driver? Had you been on your leave, or when did that happen?
We went to Tokyo. We went on R&R, my brother and I.
Now, tell me about that. You've got photographs of that as well.
Mm.
What do you remember about your leaving Tokyo?
We left from Gimpo Airport and just outside Seoul, and went to, I think it's called Tachikawa Airport, outside of Tokyo. We landed there, and from American planes, and we had to hand in everything we had, any rifles, ammunition, guns, whatever, stripped clean. And then we were taken to some billets, quite good billets actually. They were Japanese barracks originally, which the Americans had taken over, and they'd converted it. The British by that time had populated it with our own people, and it was used as an R&R for all British personnel in Korea. So we had some days there, and again, you went through the delousing situation, clothes again taken away from you, cleaned up, given back to you. And then they had trucks going into Tokyo so that you could spend some time. There was a place where they had troops, and like a very large NAFI. And of course, looking around Tokyo, I was very impressed actually with the houses, because they were, I'd never seen anything like it before. They're very clean, very courteous. I took the opportunity of going to Hiroshima and Nagasaki.
Did it make an impact on you?
It did. I was seeing all that flat like that. The only thing that was standing was a bank, one of them, a bank building.
You went to both?
I went to both, yeah. Yeah.
Had you realised what a big thing it had been?
I didn't before. I had no idea. No idea whatsoever. But looking at the, because by then they'd got posters of terrible people who'd been scarred, burned, crisps, God knows what. Made me very aware of the fact that the power of that thing was tremendous. Tremendous.
And what did you do in Tokyo? Just go to the bars or...?
We went to the bar, and they had these, we went to the cinema quite a few times. Bizarre shows. And
did you get on well with the Japanese?
Didn't have a lot to do with them, really. I think I bought some. I was in the bazaar one day, and I saw some underwear for ladies, and I thought, I'll send Hazel some. And I bought some, and I sent it home. And I also bought some china. I was interested in some china, and I sent that home to Mum and Dad. They got it, actually. All in, it was all right. Packed, well packed, and sent back. So then, obviously, time came for going back. It seemed strange going back again, after, sitting down at tables with napkins and everything.
Now, you went back. Now, did you become the colonel's driver straight away, or did you carry on in your dinger for a while?
Well, we did another month of dingo work, and then...
Anything about that? Anything happening in that month?
No, not really. It was just routine patrols, and then I became the colonel's driver.
Now, what were your duties as a colonel's driver?
Oh, now that was very interesting, because...
what was his name, firstly, if you remember?
Colonel Lowther.
Lowther?
Lowther. Baronet.
Do you know how you spell it?
L-O-W-T-H-E-R.
Thanks. And what was he like, and what were your duties?
He was very... very well-built gentleman. Very deep voice. Growl at you, you know, sort of thing. Very colonelish. Yes, my duties were to attend him and take him wherever he wanted to go.
In what? Jeep?
In, well, whatever. In
or
the, in the dingo if we were doing a swan.
What vehicles did you have then?
Well, I had the dingo, the Humber, and then there was obviously the Centurion.
So you actually had a Centurion staff, you know, tank as well?
Yes, but there was also a crew with the Centurion. Obviously, I was just a driver.
But you acted as a driver within that group?
Within the group, if needed, yes. Not always, because there was other people who could drive it as well.
And what did you think of... I mean, what was the job like then?
Well, you were excused all civil or military duties as such because you were on standby day and night, as it were. But mostly, he would be called to O groups down at HQ, which was back about 10 miles or so, and we'd belt down there. He'd go in to see the brigadier and get all the orders and find out what was going to be done, I suppose, for the regiment, on where they wanted us to go and do, and how far forward, what to do, and so on and so forth, and then I'd bring him back again. It was quite a pleasant job, actually, because I often said this to Hazel, what he was having up the front after the O groups, I was having round the back. And one time, I think I had too much libation, and he drove me back. He didn't like that, but anyway.
So you wouldn't obviously go into the O groups, but anything else? What, so that's one part. So driving him to O groups. What else did you have to do?
Well, of course, there was a big group of everything. The whole division was moved forward then. Started going up country. There was a lot of movement up and down MSMs and so on and so forth. And one day you'd be in one place and the next day you'd be somewhere else. Then, of course, we arrived at the position where it got very static. And there was not a lot to do, really. We weren't called on...
As a tank unit?
As a tank unit. A lot more maintenance was done as the weather got better, of course. A lot of more people went in on R&R.
Now tell me about your maintenance work, because you've got quite a lot of vehicles there to look at.
Well, the Humber car, if there was anything wrong with it, of course, basically we had Remy in the HQ, and it was more or less down to them, that one, because they always looked after the staff car. I only virtually drove it and kept it clean, which wasn't very often, especially in the rainy season.
So what would you go in most? You'd have the dingo? So
dingo. He'd like to go forward with the dingo. He was keen to see what the ground was like.
And that, we've already discussed, that didn't need much maintenance.
No.
And what about the Centurion? What maintenance did that need?
Well,
the whole crew, of course.
The whole crew, not only me. again, being the Colonel's tank, a lot of Remy people did a lot of work on it. And it had to be right, it had to be, supreme, as it were.
So, although you had three, two of them were really off your hands.
Off my hands, yeah. The Dingo was really my baby. But it was good because, he appreciated the fact that I could do whatever was needed. And I was quite happy to do it, so.
Now, what?
When you didn't want me, as a guard's recce, if he didn't want me at all that day, then I would go with my brother somewhere. We'd go out somewhere, do some wrecking. It was just usual work, go and have a look.
Anything happened ever? We still coming under fire, or was it quieter?
It was quieter, a lot quieter, yeah.
Now, how are you getting on with your brother? Did you settle down with him all?
Oh, yes. We worked out who was in charge.
And who was that? That's quite interesting.
He was going out, I was coming back.
So you didn't argue about it then?
No, I mean, we'd worked out, he said, that if we established what needed to be known, once we'd known that, then there was no point in sticking around, get out of it. I mean, what was the point? You don't want to stand there and sit there and get hammered.
Now, was there any question of you getting any promotion? I mean, did you seek promotion?
I didn't seek promotion, no. Although I know I was considered for it, but nothing came of it.
Well, why didn't you fancy promotion? I mean, was there any reason?
If I'd have been promoted, I'd have been whipped away from him, wouldn't I? You'd have had to take over something else.
So it wasn't in your interest as far as you were concerned. Anything else happened? One thing I haven't asked about is the latrines. What were the latrines like in winter and summer?
In summer, obviously, you could smell the latrines, and they had to dig a fresh hole every day. We used to get, there was Koreans, Korean people used to do that for us, and they used to dig a fresh one every day. They had to. I know one night, I've just remembered something. One night, somebody had gone to the toilet, and there was a hell of a bang, and there was shouting going on. This was night time, and all of a sudden I heard this engine. And what it was we got to know him as Cheeky Charlie. It was a Chinese, and he used to sneak in over the British lines and drop grenades over the side. And what he used to do, he used to get altitude, cut the engine, and just glide in over the top, drop his bombs, open up, and go away. And he did this two or three times, and we thought we'd catch him. And so we set up all these machine guns all on the top of these low surrounding hills, and waited for him all night, and he never turned up.
Did he ever turn up?
He turned up, yes.
And what happened then?
He never got him. Never got him. No, he got away.
And did he do much damage with his bombs?
He did some damage to some of the B vehicles, yes, but nothing drastic to the tanks, because they just, whatever it was, bounced off them.
Now, what about the latrines in winter? What was that like?
To be honest, one had to do, you couldn't go out in the cold. You couldn't do it. You had to do it in whatever you were in. And then take the consequences outside. You didn't go out. It was too cold. As soon as you bared your skin, you're in trouble. So you should just be string vests, you know. They called it string vest, and it was string.
That helped?
A little bit, not a great deal.
Now, anything else happening while you're out there?
I don't think so. I think we covered most everything that happened.
So what happens next then?
Well, we heard that we might get relieved, and then we was officially told that the 5th Inniskilling Dragoon Guards were to relieve us in a month's time.
Now, what preparations were made about that?
Well, all the... There were four forward elements of the 5th Inniskilling Dragoon Guards came to the regiment, and they were distributed amongst the corresponding companies and units. And eventually a corporal came up to Dennis and said that, introduced himself and said that he was taking over Dingo. And I was told that a chap came up and said that he was taking over the Humber Scout car. And so I gave him all the equipment I had, which was an M1, American M1. I had a 4.5 American pistol. All bits and pieces that we'd acquired, we gave them all our tent equipment, all our cooking equipment, gave them as much information as we possibly could, pointed out on the map where they should and shouldn't go, did everything we could to help them, and they just took over. And when they took over, they put us in transports and eventually took us back to Pusan, and we went into barracks there.
Now, anything about the journey back, or was that nothing?
Happy all the way. Happy all the way. Couldn't get there quick enough.
Now, what were the Pusan barracks like?
They were quite good. They were sheltered, they were warm. And we couldn't have cared less, really. We knew we were going home.
Now, when is this? This is December, or is it November, December?
I think it was...
Oh, I think that's travelling time. Yeah, it says till January. You're in Korea, but... I suspect that's included in the journey home time. So you're in Pusan roundabout. Anything happened while you're there? What were you doing in Pusan barracks?
Getting cleaned up, getting rest, getting some decent food in us, sorting out your gear. Writing letters, getting ready to go home.
Now, what was going on in Pusan? Did you get to walk around? What was Pusan like?
Busy, very, very busy. There was lots and lots of traffic. It was a hive of industry.
And who? I mean, is this Koreans or is this British or Americans? Who's busy? What's going on?
There's lots of movement. As a Commonwealth division, there was a lot of equipment being rotated up and down the MSM. We brought some tanks down on flats down to Pusan for reworking. The engines are pretty well knackered by then.
So there were workshops in Pusan?
Yeah. Oh, yeah, big, roomy depot there. lots of equipment was being reworked there. Oh, there was a hell of a lot going on. The rear echelon, I mean, it was a hive of industry. What was going on down there was what we were getting back up the sharp end, as it were. So to see that, you could realise how much support there was there for what was going on further up the line, as it were. Yes, ships, dozens of ships waiting to unload. And of course, a lot of troops were going over on leave about that time.
Now, what about your voyage? You were just going straight back to where? England?
England, yeah.
Do you remember which ship you were on?
Yes, the Georgie, the jolly old Georgie.
Again, you mentioned that, of course.
Couldn't believe it, because when we went down to the docks, Americans supplied us trucks to go down to the docks. And when we arrived on the docks, what did we see? It was that jolly old Georgie.
Now that's the one that had been,
that's the one
been
was on
before.
The bottom outside Suez.
Took you back from India, I think.
Yeah.
And had it changed at all? Or is it still bent?
Still the same old bend. Corkscrewed like a pig, she did. You really did.
Now, what do you remember the trip back? Your
great.
Usual tricks?
Well, that's interesting because after we got settled in and found our billets and decks and where we were and have things, I did my usual thing, volunteered for the cookhouse. Now, my brother came to me one day and he said, there's a card school going on. And he says, I'm going to have a look at it. Now, we both come in with a couple of hundred quid apiece. You know, we'd drawn. And anyway, he went off, and then a bit later on in the day, he came to me later on and he said, would you look after this? And he'd won a couple of hundred quid or something like that. And this went on all the voyage. Yeah? Now, I think before we got into the Mediterranean, he said, he came to me one day and said, I've had a bad run. He said, can you let me have some money? So I did, and he lost that as well.
So not only he won a lot of money, but then he lost even more.
Yeah. So eventually it finished up on the whole boat. There was a group of about four people who came off that boat loaded, because they had little groups all over the boat on all the decks, and then it evolved into lower, a few less, and it finished up with just four. And they'd got practically all the money on the boat they'd won.
I mean, did you warn him against gambling?
Oh, yeah. I said, well, you know. Yeah. And obviously when he was clever enough to realise, you know, that he couldn't go on doing it. So he saved a bit of money. He saved a bit. Enough to get by on when he got home.
And now, what else were you doing on the voyage? What do you remember about the voyage? Which way did you go?
Oh, we came through the Suez Canal again. Bitter lakes. Out into the Indian Ocean. Into the Med. Past Gibraltar.
You didn't get ashore anywhere?
No. And we knew then that we as soon as we saw the old rock, we thought, well, it won't be long now. And the thing that I did see was somewhere.
Don't worry, because they won't be able to see it. Just tell us about it.
Well, it's a light ship. It's a light ship which is off the coast of England. And I'd seen it before. We landed at Liverpool.
Now, what about customs there?
We weren't allowed. We had to wait off in the roads for a while, and a lot of British police MPs came on board, and it, like a flash, the rumour went round. They said anything that illegal arms or anything like that, you better put through the porthole, because you won't be allowed to take it ashore. And I had that.
What? Sorry.
That Hazel showed you that momentum of Korea in my backpack.
Oh, the wooden thing, yeah.
Yes.
A wooden ornament.
The
thing,
wooden
yeah.
ornament.
Strange thing.
I thought, oh, well, I'll keep it. But there was a lot of splashes, I can tell you, going on before we got ashore. But there was a brass band, welcomed. British Army band welcomed us back, and they had a speech from some brigadier or other welcoming us back and thanking us for our efforts.
So they made a bit of a fuss of you?
Oh, they made a bit of a fuss. There was photographers there was news people there, and they filmed us apparently coming ashore. Pathé News, I think it was. Everybody was waving, a lot of shouting, and of course there was a lot of people who had come up from London or through the Midlands to greet the troops, to see their loved ones as it were. And we disembarked. We had something to eat before we disembarked, and then they put us on trains, and we all went down to Bomington again. That was familiar.
That was going to be your base, was it?
That was going to be the base for disembarkation leave, and eventually for returning to civil life.
Now, so you went on leave first?
Yeah.
With your brother?
Yes.
And what was leave like? I mean, how was it getting back after? I mean, you know, you've been in danger, you know?
Yeah, it was strange. Of course, Mum and Dad were very pleased to see us. We were fated. The Birmingham people made a lot of fuss about it.
Tell me about that, because that doesn't happen everywhere. What sort of reception did you get, you and your brother?
Very good. There were actually quite a lot of the chaps were from Birmingham. In fact, there is today the HSRs were given the freedom of the city of Birmingham. And there's another parade coming off shortly up in the Midlands, where they'll parade again. Yes, we were looked after. The mayor invited us to go to the town hall, and we received there. And quite when we got there, the rest of the fellas, Birmingham group, were there, and they were all entertained. We were well looked after, well received.
Now, so what happened then? Back to Bovington.
Back to Bovington.
Now, how long have you got to go before you're going to be demobilised? It wasn't straight away, was it?
No. Well, we had 28 days of disembarkation leave, and then we went back to Bovington.
And what were you doing at Bovington?
Not a lot. We had to report in the morning. The RSM had us all on parade, and he said, as from now, he said, I want you on parade in the morning. We'll have a head count. And he said, I don't want to find you on the campus until the following morning. If I do, you'll be found something to do. So we used to go off into Bovington, Bournemouth.
That's the
get
name.
Out of the way. He said, what he wanted to do was, he said, no regimental duty whatsoever for Korean veterans. Off my parade ground, I don't want to see you.
So what would you do in Bournemouth?
Oh, cinema, YMCA.
Did you have enough money for Bournemouth?
No, not really, no.
For going there every day?
You used to have a free truck ride in there, and you just used to, you know, just to go around and have a look around, and mostly the NAFI really. They had a lot of free film shows and things.
Because it would be what? Was it before or after Christmas?
After Christmas.
January, yeah.